Economic Development Committee, Tuesday, November 6, 2018. I got 602 with our Alderman Creeder, Alderman Coe, and Alderman Peterson. Citizen comments? Hearing none, minutes for correction slash approval for October 2nd, 2018. Any questions? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, new business, item one. EDC 2018-73, building permit reports for September 2018.
All right, in September, we added 14 single-family homes, issued a total of 72 building permits. Five of those were commercial. A lot of the miscellaneous are fences. This time of year is a big last push for fences and actually pools, believe it or not.
Okay. Any questions? If not, item two, EDC 2018-74, building inspection reports for September 2018.
In September, we did a total of 324 single-family inspections, and the remainder of those would be 183 commercial permits for, and most of those are done by either Bob or the service we have helping us out. Seems like we've gotten over that whole introductory period with the new people helping out, and everything's going pretty smoothly. We've also transitioned this month using EEI for doing some of the final engineering inspections because Tom Cohen retired. So that's one of the issues we're dealing with that now too. So,
any questions? If not, move on to item three, EDC 2018-75, property maintenance report, 2018. September.
Lost my property maintenance. The big stat on the property maintenance is we also adjudicated the sight line for the sawmill downtown.
I see.
The case got, that one got basically suspended for 2 weeks so we could bring more information to the hearing officer. At our one we were at last time, Andrew represented us from the city's attorney. We ended up winning that one. He was confused. The hearing officer was confused as to the rules about it. And also we won at the same time, won a judgment about the weeds and grass in the property. He didn't quite understand the way the ordinance is written with the property owner having to maintain the area between the public street and their property line. So if you notice on there, case was pushed and then brought back. But that's the big standout from the property maintenance license.
Is this the one with that has a site issue?
There's one on there with a site issue, Ken, there's a weeds and grass.
I see two dismissed and one continued.
Yes, the dismissed one was because one of the citations was written improperly.
Okay.
So I dismissed that one out of hand instead of going to hearing. And the other one was continued. He wrote two citations for weeds and grass when he should have only written one. So I dismissed one of the weeds and grass citations, and the other one was dismissed because he wrote an exterior structure citation for a tree.
Okay.
And currently our ordinances, we only have regulations on dead trees if they're ash trees and they harbor the emerald ash borer disease. And if you can't gain access to his property, even though we have access to an arborist, I can't get them on the property. And I wasn't aware they wrote that citation until before the hearing, and that's why that one we lost.
Okay.
But we actually have added language into the new codes we'll be bringing before you to handle those issues, the dead trees.
Because right now you have to contact the neighbor and kind of negotiate with him to get it removed, right?
Yes, and barring the fact that the issue we have with Mr. Nicholas, obviously he's a tree expert, so I said I believe it was an emerald ash borer tree. I could say that, and I do believe it is.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he's got a lifetime of working in the logging experience, and whether or not he believes it honestly is or is not, if he says it's not, we can't get a professional on site to prove it. And I've asked the arborist if they can actually do it from the street, and they said, no, we actually have to go up and physically look at the tree and touch it. Is it out? So that one's out. So that's why that second one is missing.
All right.
What's a home occupation?
Home occupation is when we get someone calls and says someone's, you know, running a fabrication company out of their garage or something like that. The home occupation on this one was on Hill Street, I believe. That's a
gentleman is, I believe he currently still is, even though he's been evicted and has been to court, and he's up for to be evicted by the sheriffs very soon here, hopefully. He's running a garage mechanic service. We went to court, and he said, no, it's not. I just fix things for friends. And then we presented evidence from his Facebook page saying that he's more than happy to fix the cars for a cheaper price than anywhere else at his house. And then we showed the parade of cars. I mean, we had 4 or 5 cars in a one-week period of time there up on Jackson being worked on that weren't registered to him. So.
And he's in a duplex.
And he's in his company attire, wasn't he?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And we've spoken to the owner, and he has an attorney. He's been fervently trying to get him removed from the property, but you know, they had to follow the due process of the law. So I guess he's scheduled for sheriff's eviction soon, is what he was telling us last week.
Yeah, that process takes a long time.
Yes.
Any other questions? Okay. Next week. Item number 4, EDC 2018-76, Economic Development Report for October 2018.
Hi, everybody. You've got your little report in front of you. I want to give you some other updates. First of all, I want to talk about south of the river, Fountain Village. As many of you may have heard, new owners of that center. It is a group called Yorkville Holdings, which is the actual owners of the Roadhouse restaurant. And so they're going to be expanding the Roadhouse into the premier mortgage space. They're going to be using that for parties and concerts or live music. They have live music now, just make it a little bit more bigger for everyone. And also, exciting news that on Thursday, we've been going back and forth with an end user to take the old Subway space, and this gentleman actually has access to a couple of different concepts, and we have been really focusing on Popeye's chicken, and he has agreed to do the Popeyes. So Popeyes will be, they'll be signing the lease on Thursday. So the lease is not signed yet. Until the lease is signed, it is not 100% done. But Brandon told me today he's agreed to come on Thursday and sign the lease. So the Popeyes will take 2,500 square feet. So now the discussion is, and this is where we don't know yet, is that he has 2 other concepts that he does, and he might put another concept and actually take a little bit more space there. So there might be Popeyes and another national chain.
Which unit is it?
The End.
I thought the pizza place was going in there.
No, pizza place is now going over into a space that's never been occupied before, it's not been built out. And she has signed a lease, and she is going to be working on her build-out. She has to do a complete redesign because she was going into... First, she was going to go into the End space. Then, when this guy came along with the Popeyes, it was like, okay, I mean, he needs the drive-up. Mm-hmm. She didn't really need the drive-up, so we were going to move her down. But then the man with the Popeyes actually has this concept where he would do kind of, you know, like when you see the Taco Bell, KFC in Yorkville. Mm-hmm. So it would be kind of the same kind of concept. It would be Popeyes with another... national chain. So that's great. Very good. Positive, very positive. And so Jenna and JB's Pizza and Grill will still be opening further down in the center. And Deconstruction is negotiating a space there as well. It is the former the salon space. But see, they're kind of a temporary user, because they would be using that space while they're doing Route 71 improvements. So, you know.
Is their temporary office?
It's their temporary office while the 71 improvements are taking place. So, it will bring foot traffic, you know, which is great, you know. But basically, the way everything's kind of moving along, it looks like there might be only one space left in that center when this all, as this all kind of settles down, which is a wonderful thing. So, you know, big changes. Because when I think of Fountain Village, a few years ago, it was so sad. You know, there was nothing there, and everything was closing, and now all of a sudden it's going to be really coming back to life. So, so all very good news. And then Kendall Crossing, obviously, you know, Grace Coffee, we just talked about it offline, is getting ready to open, and probably in December, I would think. And then, actually, they will be breaking ground on the Hacienda Real building at the end of this week, and then 1 week later, it'll be for the flight building over at Kendall Crossing. So that's moving forward. Planet Fitness, a little bit about that. They have actually their permit was issued last week. So I had a couple people ask me, actually stop me in the store and say, is that happening? We heard it's not going to happen. I said, no, everything just takes time. So it's like, it's happening. So they're thinking they're going to open right after the first of the year. But they're going to have their little office open in the old Hallmark space and sell memberships. So everything is moving ahead. Arby's, the change with that is that Jonas, who is a wonderful entrepreneur, is now working with someone to actually purchase the building. And I think that's a really good thing, because that building was owned by a group out of Arizona, and he was going to do a long-term lease. And if he has the opportunity to actually purchase that building, it's better for him, which is better for us. He's a resident of Yorkville. He's a great, great person. But he is saying to me that timing should not be changed. He should still be on target for opening in the spring of 19, because he should be able to get through what he has to get through and stay on target. So, and Salerno's Red Hots, I think that they're getting ready to. They passed inspection with the health department today, and that's a little A-frame that some of us may remember as Gil Rios is, or I mean, yeah. Uglies. It's been so many different things. So maybe next week they'll be opening. So. GoForward Sports, they had the United States and New Zealand women's rugby team. That was actually on November 4th. That was on Sunday that they were there. And they're having a big superhero challenge this weekend on the 11th. So lots of stuff going on at GoForward Sports. If you kind of check their Facebook page, there's lots of different activities there. It's very cool. So that's really kind of sums up a little extra things I wanted to tell you about. And anybody have any questions or... And also, one of the big changes going to be happening is Alex Berman from Kendall Marketplace is now, we've been working with this group called Bespoke. They're a group of consultants, and we've been working with them, kind of getting an idea on how to create a new focal point of the center. And one of the other changes that he's going to be doing is he's going to be working locally with Jason Pasola as his broker instead of Edgemark. Edgemark was, they had C.B. Richard Ellis at one time, and then he had Edgemark, and they never came to Yorkville. I mean, I went with him on the interviews, and they said they were going to bring people here, and they never came here. So he's going to try using somebody local.
So they're the ones that were going to put the building up, like the people were saying Ross. Is that the one? Was he going to put that in there?
That was potential.
A while back? Yeah. Okay.
So, but we're going to kind of get a reboot.
Okay.
So they're trying to come up with a new plan, a new focal point to the center, and hopefully get some things going on the outlots with some quick serve restaurants. That's something that's been needed in that area. So we'll see what can happen now. So, okay.
Questions? Okay, thanks. Item 5, EEC 2018-77, Heartland Subdivision, PUD amendment for a side yard setback.
All right, I'll give a brief overview of the request, and then Greg Marker and Dan Kramer are here making the request, and after I'm done, they can add anything or anything you guys want to add. The request is for lot 187 in the Heartland subdivision. On your map, it's at the southwest corner of McHugh and Veterans Parkway. It's directly adjacent to the new Casey's general store. The request is to change a side yard setback from 20 feet to 10 feet, and additionally, the petitioners have requested increasing our maximum height for fencing from 6 feet to 8 feet in a commercial district. Just going over, this would be the third amendment to the Heartland agreement. The first one was in 2001, the second one in 2005, and the second one in 2005 actually created Heartland Center, which is the businesses to the east. It looks like this would be part of Heartland Center, but it's actually still part of the Heartland subdivision. It was left alone, so it is Zone B3, and it's part of the Heartland subdivision, so that is the document we're amending. Let's see. So we'll go through staff review on page 3 of the memo. It shows an outline to kind of show you where the existing side yard setbacks are, how big of a envelope that would create versus what they're being proposed for that extra 10 feet. Through staff review, we held a planning council meeting in September. At the time, the petitioner is also requesting, there's that median on McHugh Road, they were requesting either making it mountable or removing it. Staff and EEI were against that petitioner request, and I believe is their intention to not move forward with that. Moving along to staff's review, there are some things we're still requesting from the petitioner to show to give us more detail on what they would be proposing here. We understand they're just proposing the side yard setback, but to have some context onto what they're thinking to bring, we're still asking for. They showed the setbacks and how the building on their conceptual site plan would fit, but we're just looking for dimensions of the building and exact setbacks. We're also looking for the total height to be shown, if it's going to be a two-story, three-story building, one-story. And then also something to show kind of generally how it's going to be scaled, some sort of visual 3D graphic or something like that. Just it's kind of an odd-shaped lot. It's on a corner lot. We just want to kind of see how is it going to look related to Casey's and the Heartland Center subdivision. We've also requested a photometric plan, a lighting plan that conforms to our code. The fencing detail in between plan council and this meeting, when we were getting public notices ready, the petitioner let us know they wanted to increase from 6 feet to 8 feet for their fence height. We did not review it at plan council, so I added this back in. Hopefully tonight you guys can give us some context to that request. Moving on to the comprehensive plan. Our comprehensive plan shows this as in the future land use as mid-density residential. While it shows this, there are commercials to the east and the west surrounding this, very similar to Casey's, commercial, the comprehensive plan also calls out commercial development is important along 34. The proposed office use, depending on, again, what goes in there, would not be strictly commercial, and it's one of those things. It's not mid-density residential, and it's not really commercial. So it's just something we need more details on for the use. And finally, the vehicle access and circulation. Again, with the conceptual site plan shows one access point coming off McHugh Road. That would be a right-in, right-out, since the median is still going to be there. In terms of safety concerns with fire and just overall circulation, staff's requesting that they connect at least to the Casey's parking lot to the west to improve circulation and increase their safety. You'll also find in the packet, EEI included their notes from their review of the initial submission. And so now we are just looking for comments and questions from the Economic Development Committee. And Greg and Dan, if you have anything to add might just want to go first, just because we were requesting things. Maybe they have answers to questions we already had. I have a conceptual site plan.
I gave you the revised one. I came in and brought it in that had the setback dimensions and stuff on it.
I don't have that, but
okay.
Oh wait, we can show it here, and I'll take it from now.
It just it's I added the stuff you want about it.
Okay.
At this point, elevations and massing is kind of irrelevant because we aren't going to. We're just trying to get it adjusted now, so in the future we can build the building and go through all of this. I called out square footages, maximum heights, that sort of thing, but we aren't designing the building at this point. When we design the building, we still have to go through the whole process of permitting everything else and reviews. So I've got stuff I made up, but it's. I wouldn't call it irrelevant, but I would call it it's not necessarily going to look like this. I mean, at this point, it's all just conception. On the plan, I did show
site in relation to the Casey's and to Blackstone, which the other buildings at all. Those are the actual distances apart they are. If we do this a three-story building, that's about how tall it would end up being. So Casey's, I want to say, is 26 feet high, the fascia, more fascia, and we're at 30, 38 or something like that.
Is this scaled?
Not really. They're scaled to each other, but it's not eighth inch or anything like that.
We would need a scale.
That's fine. I can print it out that way.
So, I always thought it was a tiny little piece of property.
I agree.
So, I get the wanting to push the setbacks, and then I'm still looking at your maximum building size is under 1,900 square feet. Mm-hmm.
But you go multiple stories.
Right.
I mean, two-story building needs roughly 4,000 square feet.
Yeah.
Which meets the parking requirements.
Yeah.
My boss wants to do is he wants to do some kind of roof deck on it, which we think is nuts, but he wants to do it. So we could do a smaller footprint as long as we keep it under 4,000 square feet. And without changing the setback, we can go 1,300-something square feet anyways. So if we don't change the setback, we can go a three-story building and meet all your requirements off the bat.
Yeah.
Doing this lets us go a bigger footprint and probably keep it to a two-story building.
Yeah. And then what would be the... Why would you need 8-foot fences? Just around the dumpster enclosure?
No, just across the back to screen Casey's. I mean, if you look at it, if you have windows across the back, you're basically looking at the side of Casey's.
Right.
Yeah, my thoughts were, too, that it's very narrow. I even went out and spent some time walked through it today, actually, this morning. And it just seems like we took a lot of grief and put Casey's in for what we were going to be doing at that intersection. Just, and that's, you know, this is... I didn't even realize this wasn't part of that when Casey's came in, and that's when I found out that the marker was on it. And I have some safety concerns as far as this is going to be right on that intersection, right?
Well, it's going to meet all your setbacks on front and side. The only one would be back between Casey's.
I mean,
otherwise the setbacks are fine, Ken.
Only thing we're changing is this: we could go in with the building right now, the way it is, and it meets everything of your requirements. We're just trying to bring this back. And allows us to go with a smaller building.
And it would be a low-impact user. In terms of, it doesn't make sense for, and there's no way you could do a drive-through like with a retail, unless you went back to those old Kodak cuts that us old people would remember, and they're not in vogue anymore. with the one driveway, we talked about that at EDC, and we could certainly do, with Casey's permission, an emergency drive, you know, into their parking lot if they would give us the cross access. We can't make them do that, but we can request it from them. But we anticipate there's a good chance that this would become the Marker and Associates office. They've got some people looking at their existing building now. So, again, we think it's good economic use of piece that you're getting no tax revenue off now. Plus, if they go there, they still would have another rental space. And probably something like a destination office, a realtor, something of that nature. It wouldn't be a high-volume user. We suggested, and another battle we didn't need to fight, but we've looked at it over the years, and having lived in town and gone there, and some of you probably thousands of times, we thought it might make sense to have a drive-over median, because right now that traffic configuration is kicking an awful lot of traffic back around in front of a day school. And when you talk about safety, you got parking spots on the aisle on both sides they drive through. Staff was totally against it. We said, fine, we're not fighting. Just a suggestion. So we can live with the staff recommendation of that. Like I said, the only two questions are that line with Casey's, and I mean, we'll see if they have any objection at the public hearing, and I doubt it very seriously. And the type of fencing, we're open for suggestions there. We are thinking something, you know, solid, like a PVC or so on. But we're open to suggestions there. And what we view this as is a two-step process, that if we're successful amending the PUD as far as the reduction setback between us and Casey's and the fence side, and if things go good with their prospective tenants over there, then Greg will finally design building and come back in. We go through your entire site plan and landscaping plan review.
So would the fence go the whole length, even through the parking lot? Is that the plan?
Probably, yeah.
Across so you go all the way down to the
somewhere
end,
along here,
where the point is.
Yeah, and for instance, if you said, gee, you know, if you did the plastic solid PVC, do the 8 foot where the building, where the windows aren't out facing there, and you cut it down to the 6 parking lot, you could live with that too. That's not a big deal.
And it's also this plan, so the Casey's has their pull out down there, right? Is this the second pull out, like right next to that pull out?
Casey's is down here.
Yeah, but it's not that.
It's not that far. The distance.
What's the distance between the two?
That when we get more refined plans.
Yeah,
it's 100 feet.
Is it really
100
feet?
That's, I don't know.
It lines up at that intersection.
Huh?
It lines up at the intersection,
does?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's between 75 and 100.
We don't have plans to verify that distance. So we'd have to see some dimension plans to verify.
That's the other thing I was thinking, because everybody was complaining to us about, with cases, about the right in, right out. Now you got two right in, right outs.
Yeah.
Going into one spot there.
Yeah.
There was a lot of complaints about that when they came through.
And that's what we brought up with, especially with the median. We were initially opposed to it, but we offered the petition if they provided a traffic study and traffic engineering, we would review it. But our initial response was we're concerned about just a lot of the points of conflict down there with the two entrances. Additionally, because this is a PUD amendment, we do have the ability to require plans for buildings, so it's not like a variance.
No, I understand.
Yeah, so we're going to require those. We're going to ask for those. We're going to ask for more details on those. And then the fence, the reason why staff was opposed to the fence, because it's best planning practices to have that general circulation from two areas. Aesthetically, it's not going to be pleasing to see one particular site just walled off. There are no other sites along that frontage that have fencing in between like that. And then the height variance is another issue. There's no justification for the height variance in staff's opinion unless we get something in writing from the petitioner. It's usually you would have that fence height in between two incompatible uses, but these are not, and that's usually commercial or residential, not commercial in another similar land use type.
That was the other thing. If you didn't have the fence all the way down the line, that with the parking lot, it kind of opens it up a little bit. There's a little more visibility.
Yeah, that would be sensible. That would be workable.
If you divide the fence down the whole row.
Yeah. Now, if you've got it, like Greg said, with the ice scape with the windows, and you've got a lot of pulling in and pulling out with a gas station, I realize zoning-wise, maybe same use, they're both commercial, but in terms of usage, way, way different.
How many cars do you think you can fit in the parking area?
So you get, 14?
14.
Yeah.
And then how do you...
And those are all regulation size.
If you rent the other spot, how do you ensure that it's not going to be a high-volume renter that would create more... You know, you're saying it's going to be, like, low-key, not so busy, but how do you...
Who they rent to, because they own it, so...
Yeah.
And so if they've got their own office there. Like
we're two cars for our office, so it's not the other 12 or whoever else rents it.
I'm not trying to be a smart aleck.
No,
they've got the keys to the prison on that one.
But, you know, you're right. You could, whenever you do this, they meet our minimum requirement for a car, but it could be big.
It could blossom, yeah. Something to think about in the future.
Well, the pass-through into Casey's will knock out two more of our parking stalls, at least. As part of that.
That's why I suggested maybe you do grass crete or you do a chain, not a chain, but decorative type that it's an emergency access if there was an accident blocking ours so that you wouldn't be stuck in it.
And are you pigeonholed into having the parking in the rear?
Well,
in McHugh,
it's almost
there's nowhere else we can put it. Really,
because I think you'd want the building on 34.
Right.
And sure, but like what I keep imagining happening is that you're going to be so far forward on such a narrow property as it is that instead of being a squattier property, if the building was longer and this wasn't, you know, if you were up to
towards that, that's fine. But if you started the building farther back to kind of match with where Casey's is, and then go longer backwards.
Well, Casey's building is back here.
Well, I'm talking about the structure, the fueling structure's over here. So if yours was up here and longer, and you could have some diagonal parking right there, I don't know, you couldn't have a right in, right out. I'm just saying, I don't. That's such a dinky little spot.
I don't know how to access that one ever. Give you a right in, right out.
Yeah, that close to the turn. Jump.
Well, I know it have to be a right in, right out.
No, they won't.
They wouldn't give you any
close to the 34 intersection.
And is right. I don't have any jurisdiction.
I'm saying getting farther away from 30.
That I don't know. I can check with either.
Chris, any points that you have on this? Want to mention now?
I mean, there are some concerns about this, obviously. Lines of sight, this, you know, it's a curve. We know that this curve is not the greatest in terms of the overall visual on this one. My concern is where this access is located. Vehicles coming off of 34 coming into this site, it's a quick 180 coming in. It's a challenging maneuver to do that without backing up traffic. Like you said, there are a lot of cars coming in and out to Heartland over that area. So that's kind of my concern, is having an intersection this close to 34 with the parking stalls right at the end. As soon as you're coming in, if you've got someone backing out, you can stop traffic on the queue pretty quickly there. Those traffic movements, I'd like to see more, like Christy said, the traffic study, just making sure that, you know, there aren't problems that would be, you know, exasperated by this site. You know, I like the idea of bringing in another use here if we can functionally make it happen. I don't like the idea of a fence whatsoever. Christy, you know, the staff reviews are very good.
Mm-hmm.
The fence, you know, if you're going to have windows here, why a fence? I mean, if you're going to put a window in and you're going to look out a fence, it seems counterintuitive to putting in a window in the first place. So maybe there's thought on that. Maybe it's not windows on the first floor. So, you know, there's some other options to the fence, but just some more thought to how the site flow could work. I'm not opposed to putting a structure here, but two-story, does it fit here? You know, I'm not opposed to it, but does it really fit? How is it going to look and work with the rest of the neighborhood?
Well, the big question is the setback on Casey's, the 10 feet.
The interior, yeah, from 20 to 10.
Yeah, I don't see that as a problem at all.
Okay.
I mean, well, you got to work with what you got, but you still got a really, really dinky little comma.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else, Jason?
I don't think so.
So the 10 feet you're not concerned about, so it's more fence.
Okay.
Fence and access.
Yeah. Well, that's the same thing on me.
But where would you go with it? Again, what are your thoughts? To the bottom of the property? Do you like that better? Or?
Well, my only concern is wherever you locate it. Remember, uh-huh. Casey's is required. All of their trucks are required to exit, if they exit this location, to go north to 34. So,
so
you have that number very close. There's a potential for conflicts in that. Especially with a semi, is concerned.
Again, that's why we suggested the mountable curb. And I think that would actually help Veterans Way, too, that center. You get the traffic off quicker. But, I mean, I don't... We've dealt with traffic firms before, but they usually deal more with volumes. We can see what they say. I know Louis Abuna's firm is very good at it. We can see. But I think our only... We certainly, I don't think, want to move it closer to 34. That would be a problem. So it either goes something like they've got there or, you know, all the way facing McHugh more that way. And that puts it real close then to that back entrance of Casey's at their truck traffic. And again, if you went out there tonight at night, you would see a lot of just diving through there, really high speed going down the road into Heartland off that back Casey's entrance. So,
and just gonna throw this out because I don't know if even happened this spot. Why didn't you guys talk with Casey's to see if you could, instead of parking here, you shift the parking toward the stalls, toward McHugh, and work with sharing that access, the one access point. You don't understand what I'm saying?
No.
This is a gas station bay, right?
Yeah.
So why not
got one right here?
Well, this is their full tank. This is where they park their trucks.
Yeah, kind of.
They're filling the tanks.
Right, right. Right. If people are passing, people fly.
No, no. He's talking. I'm saying the south end, Greg.
I'm taking. You're going.
You're going the back one.
Yes.
There's an aerial in your packet that
can
help.
The Casey's isn't built yet, Tom. But it's that. It's this partial right.
One entrance.
Okay.
That would be a little bit.
They're talking.
This is their pad.
I don't know if there's a problem negotiating with Casey's on that.
So basically,
that might be where the problem comes in.
You're suggesting getting rid of this second entrance off of the queue here,
right.
Sharing it with the Casey's.
Yeah, and allow have some kind of an agreement where you could exit
access it.
And it's just a thought.
Might be better than having this, because that's quick. If you're making a right turn, that's a quick another turn into there, like you said, with cars right behind you. It could be kind of a...
Yeah, if you can flip the parking and the driveway, that also then might afford you to take that dumpster, put it immediately adjacent to the building at the end of the drive lane, so it's not projecting out into the front yard or side yard. You may lose a stall or two, but that's something, you know, geometrically you can look at that. But if it is something to share drive access with Casey's, functionally that makes a lot more sense.
That's the first thing I thought of when I looked at it.
Yeah, then you wouldn't have a full 270 off of you.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk to Casey's and see if they'd be interested.
Can't hurt, right?
Worst they could do is say no.
Yeah.
Right.
And Greg didn't object when they came in, so his relationship's good with them. Matter of fact, they use this lot as their staging area.
But a lot of the Heartland residents didn't want.
Well,
we took a lot of grief from
for Casey. I remember years ago we had a client who wanted to take that old farmhouse that was zoned R3 in the county and turn it into a nice office building. And you would have thought we were murdering babies in the neighborhood, and now they still got the old crappy house.
They just got rid of the chickens, too.
Yeah.
They do burn your own waste like crazy, though.
Yeah.
It's like a cloud blowing over the place.
Yeah, that's where my kids went when there was a lighthouse there. That house is a fun one.
Okay, so the setback, we're good. Get Christy some more detail in. If, in fact, we could get something worked out with Casey's, that would obviate the need for a traffic study, I presume.
We'll still do our own due diligence on the traffic and if we have additional
questions. I would bring that to them first before. It was just a thought in my mind. That, like,
yeah, no, we'll chat with them and see what they say.
More sense.
Yep. So this project was scheduled to go to PZC for a public hearing next week. Because of the additional information, we'll probably table it to give you an opportunity to respond to the comments that we have.
Could we do the public hearing portion just to see if we got neighbors, as Ken said, if we get a troop full coming in, and then if you want to table after public hearing for action by the Plan Commission, that might make some sense.
You still owe us some information, though, before we take it to PZC. So if you can get that information to us that we requested in the memo tomorrow for packets or by Thursday.
The packets are here. I brought them with me. The mail, you mean?
No, not the mail.
No, she's talking about the
there were
building elevations.
Lighting plan, right? Overall height, the 3D graphic, the massing.
Yeah, no, that's not going to have that. Until he knows what kind of building he's going to do, he wouldn't be able to do a lighting plan anyway.
So I guess explain why we're asking for the amendments and stuff now when we don't even really know what kind of building.
Well, because if he can't do the 10 feet, then that's going to tell him it changes everything in the building. It's a chicken or the egg argument. If he knows what the pad space is, and right now, if he doesn't have the 10 feet, he knows what the ordinance is. It's a much smaller building. And then it's basically site plan review, and we don't need an amendment. But if he gets the 10 feet in the amendment, then he knows what kind of building and, of course, the entrance issue.
Like, council doesn't have any objection to the 10 feet, just if you can fix up access.
Right.
And then, yeah, just fix up access and figure out how it would sit. I think you're fine.
Okay.
Just looking at the property aerially, you're like, wow, that's, was it 0.9 acres?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a small, narrow spot, so... I'm always down to see stuff built. I just don't want to have people literally tipping their cars over when they're pulling in out from the queue. So if you can figure out access, I don't see a problem with it.
Let me rephrase the conversation that just occurred. So staff has asked for a number of items at a plan council meeting a month ago for normal due diligence packet materials according to our recommendations. that are supposed to be in the PZC packet for the public hearing next week.
Okay.
So our direction to the petitioner previously had been, we need to see these materials before packets go out, which is Thursday of this week. Otherwise, we would recommend tabling the item for another month.
Sure.
There's been another set of issues that have popped up here related to the access and some other things. And so the petitioner is saying they do not want to comply with our staff request, okay, for packet materials for a public hearing next week. So I need to know whether you're okay with that. Okay, because it sounds like you're okay with it.
No, I'm saying overall, like if you're doing this as like an exploratory mission and you're not going to comply with what they have, there's no need to keep it on PZC because now you know that the 10 feet isn't the issue. Access is the issue.
Right.
So if you can still have it discussed by PZC if you follow through with what they're asking for.
Yeah, and maybe...
It's two separate issues now.
And we mentioned Casey's... The conversation. That's what
yeah, it, like for me,
I don't
all
understand
access.
How a month makes that big of a difference.
Yeah, let's step back then. I don't think Bart, we're saying no, we don't want to comply with staff. We're not trying to be stubborn. We're just trying to get, and I know there's a different goal here. Basically, Christy, you're saying you want to see what the building elevation is and the final.
Right, because it's a PUD. I want to balance what
yeah,
it is you're asking
and
for.
And he's saying, look, until I
what
knew
benefit the
that
city's
you're good
get.
With
right.
10. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if we can do it. And so we've gotten a feel now that we can work with you on the 10 feet, okay? Now the access is the first point to focus. And, yeah, if you want to table it, we can come back the next month. We're not trying to be hard-headed. All I was trying to do is if you get 12 citizens come in, what do you mean the petitioner isn't here and tabling it?
Have you guys notified everyone?
Of course we have.
The hearing room?
Yeah.
So sometimes that happens where people don't get notified.
So we're a good petitioner, so we were good boys there. So, okay, table it. We'll follow up on the access issue. We'll meet with staff, and if there's something that can be done with Casey's and that pleases staff, then I think we can turn him loose spending some time and money on photometrics and what the building's really going to look like. But if he didn't have the 10 feet and we can't keep you happy on the access and you say, with that access, no way we're not going to do anything, it's silly to do the other part. So, again, we're not trying to be stubborn, just kind of logical what you do with your own wallet. So that would work. So if you table it,
yeah,
that's fine. Just to explain that we're not being
sure.
Sneaky,
we're going to have the meeting anyway. We'll just continue it.
Yeah, a lot of times.
Does that make sense, Craig?
Yeah.
If a petitioner shows up to a public hearing and you know there's not full details, they end up saying, you know, why did I show up if you don't have
anything? Yeah, no problem.
So we're trying to balance that.
Yeah, and like I said, I just didn't want to come off here that we refused to do it, staff.
Sure.
I thought he actually brought these in physically, so. We thought we had, but we're fine. That'll work.
Okay.
That's good knowing about the 10 feet.
All right.
So
perfect.
We don't have to belabor or let the clock fall on this young man here who put it up.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Item number 6, EDC 2018-78, mobile food truck and retail vendor ordinance, unit ordinance.
Okay, so if you recall, when we updated the comprehensive plan, there were a lot of goals set in there to enhance that visual appearance and pedestrian interaction and environment in the downtown. So our first step at that was to do the sidewalk park, the cafe, last year ordinance, so to get some more activity on the street. So our next step in that same vein in the downtown, aside from the master overlay plan that we're preparing, is regulations for mobile food trucks and retail vendor units. So we did some research. We looked at over 30 communities across the nation, not just local, and we looked at some of our planning resources, and one of those was an article in Zoning Practice that had to do with food truck feeding frenzies, and it talked about how communities are experiencing this emergence of this kind of self-contained commercial enterprise, but they don't have any regulations on their books to really address a lot of the chic things that people are doing with these mobile units. They're having parties and venues on private property. And so right now, our ordinance only talks about mobile food vendors in the public way, but not real descriptive from the zoning side, just licensing and regulations. So we thought we'd dive in and kind of provide some more guidance on how to operate these uses on the public and the private side. And if you have any rallies, you know, like food truck Fridays in the downtown or on private property where businesses can hold them, to kind of give some more guidance so that there's more safety and more thought put into how these things would be set up in spaces where there are pedestrians as well as vehicles. So some of the proposed changes that we have, I'll just go through briefly, deal with three basic areas. We're going to address the zoning code and we're going to address the business licensing, but the areas that we're going to address is street vending, private property vending, and truck rallies, as I mentioned. So in the street vending section, that's really going to be handled in the business and licensing portion of the code, and that has not had any significant changes per se. We're just keeping the same fees, $200 for the first vehicle, $100 for any additional vehicle, and there are no application fees for any nonprofit organization or the city itself if we're holding these events. The mobile food vending on private property is a new category, and that's addressed heavily in the zoning ordinance, and we'll get into that a little bit more. But for the registration portion, we've pretty much mimicked everything that we have for the private, for the public. But in the private side, we're asking that the owner of the property also sign on the application. So you just can't come as a vendor and say, I want to hold it here on this private property without having the owner's permission. And then those fees are pretty nominal. They're $25 for the first vehicle, $10 for any additional vehicle. Anything over three vehicles would then be considered a truck rally. So you could have up to three vehicles. And then with a truck rally, those are more, they can be public, excuse me, or private, but those are more for the an entity coming in or the hosting organization coming in and getting that permit. And then that's just $50 per event. As far as the zoning regulations go, we've provided criteria both public and private. The first image shows you kind of what the regulations would be for the public. So you see the truck there, and A through E tells you, A tells you how far you have to be away from the intersection. B is telling you what area you have to maintain clear, have a clear path along the sidewalk. C is telling you where to service the public. We don't want people servicing the public in the street side. It has to be on the sidewalk side. D is telling you that you do have to have at least one trash receptacle so that you are not contributing to any littering in the area. And then the final one is telling you the maximum length of a mobile food truck in residential zones, and that's 35 feet. The second image is describing trucks on private property, and it's again A through E is telling you the length of the truck, where it can be positioned, how much space you need, how many spaces you can take up out of the total parking area, required parking area, and then there's area for you if you decide to do any seating. So we looked at, again, overall nationwide to kind of get the best of the best of all of the ordinances, but we did locally to see where we are to still remain competitive with our local area. We're consistent pretty much with Oswego and our street vending permitting fees, as well as our private property permitting fees. The only thing is we're more specific about our truck rally permits. Most communities are either it's undetermined if you can have one, or no, you can't have one. So we are proposing yes, and then that's anything over three trucks. Both the business portion, the business license portion, and the zoning are going to go for separate reviews. The Planning and Zoning Commission are scheduled to review this at their December 12th as a public hearing, and then the city clerk is going to take the business licensing section to an upcoming public safety meeting for their review. So if you have any questions, any comments, any feedback you want to give to staff before we move in December with the public hearing, I'd appreciate it.
I think the graphics are awesome. The descriptions are awesome. I think to properly convey what it is you're saying, mm-hmm. a narrative of each type, because we have street, private, and then the licensing overall. Mm-hmm. So you have street, you have private, then you have rallies. Mm-hmm. It's like you have different situations where there's overlap.
Okay.
And for me, granted I have to sit in a house with noise going on, I wasn't able to totally grasp everything. And now that you said it and I'm not listening to that, I'm able to kind of understand it. But at the same time, like a narrative. So
okay.
This truck, not from Yorkville, is here for just somebody's graduation party in front of their house. This is what it is.
Okay.
So he needs this, this, and this. Okay. Then you have, this is a festival put on by a private organization, not city sponsored, and there's three trucks, and they each have to pay for this, this, and this.
Okay.
Then you have the rally where, like, so say it was, like, Solstice or Yorktoberfest. You have a fee on behalf of the organizer, if it's private. You have the fee per truck. They have their health department fee. So just so that there's an overall,
sure.
These are all the things that you would need. So that if this, then that, P-R-O-P
okay.
type logic.
Sure.
But maybe nailing down in the language what, like certificate of registration, that's from the city to the truck, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so if it's a registration required for the truck for street use, which is like basically any time, right?
Mm-hmm.
They pay the city $200 and that's for a year, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so, but for a private event, if you had on there, oh, it's $200. As long as it's delineated, being if you're going to be here
no,
all
it's
year,
20, it's $25.
Well, I know that now, but I'm saying by having the narrative
sure.
in there, there won't be any questions.
Sure.
So then the property owner's permission is like a separate form.
It's going to be. We're going to create forms
okay.
for this. It will be on the form that we want
okay.
the property owner's signature.
Because I've had two instances where we had somebody come in as like a outside food vendor on a out of premises that was already selling food. And there was a weird overlap with the health department, even though they weren't covered by that DuPage County's health department
mm-hmm.
license.
Mm-hmm.
And then the city, after the fact, said, well, you're supposed to do this, this, and this, but it's like
they
a food truck inside. There's no way to delineate it without a narrative.
Okay.
So just the narrative, it turns into a Bernstein Bears story as opposed to reading legalese, which is not what I want to do. And then... Is there information, like, from the county? Like, the county has their, like, health permitting
Correct.
Process.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have any regulations as far as how close they are to a curb or from an intersection.
No, they don't. So that's why.
Cool. So that's, like, my next question was, okay, this is all fine and dandy, but are we undercutting or overstepping what the county has?
No.
But they don't have anything.
They don't have anything.
Cool. They're just worried about the red bucket.
The sanitation.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But the county, like, I can remember, because I'm thinking of Rosati's Pizza. And at Bridge, before we had the concession stand, we would want to bring a Rosati's truck out there. And it was okay if we sold the Rosati's pizza out of the truck as long as it didn't have meat on it. And so it was like, okay, well, this is kind of stupid if you ask me.
Right.
But so I had a concern there. Now, maybe things have changed. That was a while back. The other thing I thought of is, so what if you have someone like in our parks, you're not allowed to sell the same product, right?
So
you can't have two guys selling hot dogs, if like the hot dog guys. Somebody else can't set up a vendor, buy a vendor's license from the city, and sell hot dogs. I thought that was
not
from park board days.
Necessarily. There's a park vending license that you need to be able to actually go in a park and have a hot dog cart or an ice cream cart
right.
or put a food truck in the park. So that's governed under Parks and Recreation rules. They have non-compete language with some parks, so concession stand parks, so we're not competing against
mm-hmm.
ourselves, and in Riverfront Park, where we have concessionaires, essentially.
Which we had some issues a while back there about trying
mm-hmm.
one vendor wanted
right.
to sell certain
that
things.
It was illegal, though. He didn't have any permitting from anybody.
And he
right.
never submitted a
right.
permit or an application.
Because
so.
I think that's what I wonder about these food trucks, because this is kind of a new world, especially for here. Are you going to have anything in the language for that situation where you're saying, you know, the same truck? Because, first of all,
sure.
trucks could be different, right?
Sure.
So then when you say a rally, a person is allowed three trucks.
Up to three trucks, and then after three, it becomes a rally.
Okay, so...
But that's one company.
That's one company, right? That's not multiple companies.
No,
what if they went into the park downtown?
Yeah.
Yes, and you have, like... Two guys. Three companies have two trucks.
Define your use of the word company. You're talking about one restaurant having three other
yeah.
trucks.
No, or three different variations.
No. Think of it this way. You cannot have an event in the park unless if you rented the park and you abide by the park rental
right.
rules, or you negotiate with the city to have like a partnership agreement to be able to put on the event. So Yorktoberfest is an example. It's more of a partnership. We went. Kiwanis came to us and said, hey, we want to do X, Y, and Z. We said, great. We want to sponsor it. We'll partner. We'll help you do X, Y, and Z. So if they would have said, we're going to bring 15 food trucks to, you know, the park on a Saturday afternoon, we would say under the park use agreement or whatever, you know, agreement that we have, you know, this is allowed and it's okay because it's part of the event.
What if they're in a parking spot and not actually in the park, though?
Right.
That's all part of the park.
If you're in Town Square Park and those nose-in parking on the west side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Staff is going to consider that part of the park, not the public way.
Correct. Yeah, I think it's defined that way in the park vending agreement.
As long as it is good, right. I think we should check that to make certain, because that would be my concern.
It is, because somebody has asked if they could park across the street from Town Square during one of the Holiday Under the Stars events. This is like 5-6 years ago. And we told them if they wanted to, they could, but it's going to be a zoo. There's going to be restricted access. But there's nothing in the regulations that would permit somebody from, like, going half a block away and parking there. Same for the Riverfront Park, you know.
I think as long as the language is clear that it's the adjacent right-of-way is considered part of the park, that clearly delineates the limits. Anything outside of the adjacent right-of-way.
So I understand this whole rally with multiple trucks.
Yeah.
Because
it needs some clarification.
Yeah, you've got the same question I do then. When does it become... Like one person, he has three trucks, and another person has three trucks, and they both want to come in.
Only the number of trucks. Doesn't matter how many people own the trucks. If it's one company,
who do you pick
for? So
first thing,
take out the parks from the equation.
Well, I'm thinking, okay, you can put it anywhere you want.
St. Joseph's Cabinetry Lot. They did a food truck rally. Okay, it's not. You can only have three trucks. It's if you have three trucks or more, you're required to get this food truck rally license.
Okay, so basically that falls on the person organizing it and not the individual truck owner.
Correct.
I was thinking that I could have three trucks, I could bring them in, and somebody else might want to do their three trucks in, and now you've got a
the only non-compete language we have is for city-owned businesses. You could have seven trucks all selling tacos.
Yes,
I don't care.
Right.
You're the one throwing the event.
Yeah.
Actually, let's do that. Let's throw a taco truck festival as soon as possible. If we don't get out of here, I'm going to eat my fist.
So in that scenario, like in the St. Joseph's Cabinet, they have done a food truck rally. They had like six or seven, created an issue. There was no parking on site. It bled into adjacent properties. The fire department wasn't notified, so they didn't know that there was going to be issues there. So that's what we're trying to prevent with the food truck rally permit. It's $50. Let us know you're having it. We'll take a look at the zoning, make sure that there's not issues, that you've got appropriate permissions, insurance, and then we still require the $25 per truck license to come in and be able to do that, but it's good for the year.
Yeah.
So a rally could be considered, he owns three trucks, I own three trucks, separate entities. A rally could be me bringing my three trucks or us having three combined.
Sure.
Right? So it's not...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
It's the number.
So you got more than three trucks in one area, you need to just come to
regardless
us.
Regardless if they're online or it's combined,
So it falls on the property owner, the organizer.
Right, the organizer.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you wanted to skirt the regulations, I guess you could say you've got two, like, you know, the Casey's in this Heartland lot, and I'm going to put two on one and two on the other. Yeah. And, oh, look, we're separate entities, so we don't need to let you know.
Right.
I mean... Well, that's like the loophole there, but that's not going to happen.
I was just thinking, if you go, let's say, the Riverfront Park or downtown, and I bring a taco truck, a pizza truck, and a barbecue truck, and then he brings another truck. You know what I'm saying? You've got multiple trucks.
You're just going to park them on the streets?
Yeah, they're going to park on the streets.
Well, there's no centralized management authority, and you're on the streets. You're not on private property. Okay. So you're just governed by the...
Because you have the application, so we would know timing.
Yeah, we at that point, I think we've looked at it and said, like, if that becomes a problem that we have, like, 10 food trucks congregating in an area, they're unaffiliated, it's not a rally, we've got a great downtown scene, and then we'll come up with some other regulations.
Yeah, I figure we'll amend it if it...
You got to start somewhere. Right. I don't want to make it where it's $85 a truck.
No,
no, this is a good service question.
Jason,
any
other questions?
No, I'm good. Thank you, man.
Chris?
And we're just going to make sure that with the owner's signature, that it's owner or authorized agent.
Agent, it has to be notarized.
Okay, so it's notarized just in case, because we know some of the owners of lots of properties are not around.
Correct.
Good.
Correct.
On the second exhibit, the one that is for the private areas, you know, when you look at that, you have dimension C, the long one, the 70-foot dimension. That includes the side spaces and that. If you think of a parking lot, if you're coming in, if you have a centralized area for people to sit and you've got your centralized tables, 70 feet is excessive.
It can be,
I don't think we need to have that as the minimum. I think if we set it's more of the truck size and then we have a you're still required to have somewhere for people to congregate to eat. I think that would be better suited for this. You know, if you're going to come in, you're going to bring your truck. If you've got 35 feet for your trucks, you say it's 40 feet, 40, 40, 40. 70 feet, if you think about it, that's a lot of wasted space if you're going to centralize other uses. The one that was done over at the health department, or at the county over there this past summer, that was nice because they did have all the tables on the interior of the parking lot. All the trucks were lined. They had spaces between. They had their waste receptacles. But if you would have put 70 feet on spacing of those, they would have had half the trucks.
Well, isn't it 70 feet
if the
truck organizer so chooses the truck organizer to have the accessories? Because
no,
like if you're throwing a rally,
he has minimum amount of spaces for outdoor accessories.
That's for if you choose to have that. But the larger length is for a longer truck. So
for trucks over 35 feet, so what's the is there a minimum? Is minimum space needed for trucks over 35 feet? Mm-hmm. C would be 70. Is there a requirement then for anything smaller?
So yes. So that's B. That's the minimum space for trucks under 35 feet.
So it's still 35 feet.
Yeah.
The dimension is different. So if it's under 35 feet, it's 15 by 35. That's the space you need. If it's
right.
Over 35 feet, then you need 15 by 70.
And then the E, the spacing, that's for any truck.
If they choose. Yes, if they choose to have that outdoor.
You can't go over 70.
Mm-hmm.
You go over 70.
Yeah.
But if you're at a food truck rally, those trucks might not be putting their accessories in their 70 feet.
Mm-hmm.
They might be pitching it with the organizer. But then
correct.
With the food rally
mm-hmm.
application, you're asking for a layout?
Yes.
A tentative layout?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We need to make sure they're not exceeding, utilizing over 40% of their required parking space.
Okay.
So that if
they
other...
still have this
yes,
space.
Exactly. If there's multi-tenant.
Do you have a number in there? Or when you, like, do you require anyone to have porta-potties or anything?
I never thought of that.
That is something we have not thought of in here.
The drawing, we also have to have this submit to the fire marshal as well.
We do.
Because it's heavily regulated by the state fire marshals and our local fire marshals.
Yeah, because you got to figure 80% of these trucks have generators pop up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Generators,
oh, yeah.
The propane, you know,
noise pollution,
the fire, they need circulation.
It's always been an issue in the past in other places. I think Mike Torrance was telling me they had one in Indiana, a big deal where they have backed up against a cinder block wall, running generators, propane tanks right there on a 100-degree day. Heat reflects.
That's what Plano is doing at their festival.
So
they had a generator with a bounce house in a
right.
concrete driveway.
So what we could
kids are bouncing inside.
What we could do is because the porta potties would only be required on private property, public
yeah.
property wouldn't do that. We could require that the owner allow people to use the bathroom at their facility if they're hosting it. They should allow people to use there.
You should check and see if any of the other areas that regulate rallies in that regard
sure.
require it, if there's
mm-hmm.
a standard. And then if not, then we would just make that a component of the layout or plan that's submitted.
Thank you.
Any other questions on that?
Is there a time frame that they have on that? Like when they go into a certain area, is it like a 4-hour time frame, or is that just kind of open-ended? Because that might answer the question on porta-potty. If you're there for 4 to 8 hours, then maybe do want a porta potty.
They can't be there overnight.
Okay.
So you can't have a truck sitting overnight in any location, public or private. But
so you can be there from lunch to dinner, basically, if you wanted, if they don't run out.
That's what I'm kind of wondering if there's regulations that address it, because, like, I'm thinking about the St. Joseph's issue. They were out there for 5 or 6 hours. They were adjacent to multiple businesses. They're
right.
basically taking up all of the parking for the businesses. So theoretically, there's not going to be too many other customers coming in. So they should allow public use of the bathroom.
They did. I think in a couple of the ones
okay.
that were over there. Yeah, a couple of the businesses opened up there.
But, you know, in a scenario where they want to do the food truck, like on a Sunday night or something, you know,
yeah.
outside of normal business hours, maybe they do it as part of a festival. There wouldn't necessarily be anything that they would, you know, have to get from us in order to do it, other than this food truck rally permit. So we'll take a look at that.
But we do ask for hours of operation,
yeah.
so we would know.
Nice that's, work, by the way.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
cool.
you.
Good start.
Right.
Okay. Questions? Item 7, EDC 2018-79, Brewery Text Amendment.
Okay, so this is a continuation of the last two amendments we had to the zoning ordinance, which did with dealt with microbreweries and then micro wineries. We are now creating a category that's just brewery, because in our ordinance we did not allow for, you know, just as an example, an Anheuser-Busch to be located in our manufacturing district. So we're calling that out so that a full-scale brewery can be permitted in the M1 and M2, and as a special use in our business districts. And in the business districts, we would additionally define separate liquor classes. We would have to amend the liquor license, a liquor code license, and our ordinance. So we're doing another change where we are mimicking mirroring the state's liquor license classification for microbreweries. Right now, we do it in barrels, and the state does it in gallons, even though we're the same equivalent. We're just changing our language to be more consistent, so we'll measure it in gallons instead of barrels.
What's a barrel?
That is not my area of expertise. It's in there. Is it 55,000? 55 gallons. Okay, 55 gallons. So I do know that one barrel is equivalent to 31 gallons.
What is
that?
Well, it could be you get smaller barrels.
No, because I understand our barrels, and what is it? That's a half keg.
No.
Half barrel, right?
Half barrel is a keg.
Yes, and then quarter. So double that.
Sextal is a, yeah.
Okay. So I've been educated.
The more likely scenario here, and we did have one startup brewery that approached us, asked about this. They wanted a site in like a 1,000 square foot space in the industrial park. You see that now a lot. Energy City Brewing is one that I can think of. It's a husband and wife. Yeah. Yeah, they brew like a couple times a week. They open up for 2 days a year, so that tends to be more the model of kind of what's occurring, is that they want to shoehorn in a cheap space in an industrial park where there's good access to facilities.
They do small batches on site in 1,000, and they don't really need much in the ways of water or electricity or gas. But then they contract brew elsewhere, but they sell out of their
workforce, and they have food trucks too.
Yep. But our code does not permit that currently, so that was one issue that we needed to address.
So this, too, will go to the December 12th PCC for a public hearing.
Any other questions?
Okay. Oh,
okay. Item 8, Economic Development Consultant Contract.
Okay. Brief memo in your packet, a track changes agreement for Lynn's renewal. She's not asking for any changes in term, so price and 3-year period is the same. It doesn't expire until the end of this calendar year, so we do have another 60 days or so to consider it. We didn't prepare any in-depth materials on other options or successes or failures, things that we would do differently as we did 3 years ago when we entertained this. You know, I kind of figured that with her monthly reports and everything, most people had a pretty good idea of what she's been doing, what she's been successful in, and so I didn't spend the time to do that. So to the extent that somebody has questions about that, I'm sure Lynn would be happy to wax poetic about it, but that's the agenda item.
Is this something that we could discuss during the setting?
Could, in that it's Saturday.
Yeah, I just don't see this as being something that I don't have any complaints. I don't know what the alternative would be.
Well, the alternative that we looked at 3 years ago would be to go back to an EDC.
She's sitting right next to
me. I didn't know if you wanted me to come up and ask any questions.
Would be to go back to an EDC model to do some sort of non-profit, separate arm rather than hire a consultant or to hire somebody in-house. And the conversation that we had 3 years ago, somewhat in depth, it happened over a couple of months, was that Lynn's knowledge and then expertise and recent success at that time warranted, whatever the price the consultant ended up being. And so that was a better option rather than trying to hire somebody in-house, get them on board, and do that. So I still feel like that's, the case. I think Oswego's EDC person makes under $100,000 a year, but with benefits and pension, it probably approaches that. Granted, they get 2,000 hours out of that person, but I think the overall success rate and really the sales tax impact that you can have with some good recruitment efforts is worth the extra money.
No, I don't have any doubt that we're getting more than what we're paying for. Because, there's a difference between billable hours and what she's actually putting in. And I think Lynn's more in the category like me where you're a business card 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. So I don't have any... I don't doubt it.
And you don't have the city attachment. I mean, sometimes it's probably easier for her than a city staff person would be to talk with people. And
totally.
There's a major skepticism when I approach somebody and tell them the same exact information that Lynn might. So, there's just the perception of being at least one step removed is to our benefit, whether that's through an EDC, a nonprofit, or just through a consultant. So even if the city is paying the consultant's thing for somebody to be at least at that arm's length, it's a benefit.
Okay. So then I guess just goes forward, right? Or do we need to vote?
You would need to attach a recommendation to City Council and or put it on the regular agenda or consent agenda, depending on your
motion to.
Motion to approve, put it on the regular agenda.
Motion to approve and
regular agenda. That's fine.
Okay. Last item, meeting schedule for 2019. Any questions? I see there's this one change, the holiday date. It's just a Wednesday instead of a Tuesday.
Yeah, January.
Hi, Chris.
Hi. Okay. And we're good? See you, Joel?
Yep.
It's the New Year's, I think. Yeah. Any old business? Any additional business? Okay, meeting adjourned.
Yes! Dylan, let's go!